Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Whenever a governor seeking re-election is asked about a run for higher office, be it the U.S. Senate or president, of course, they say they aren't more focused on the task at hand. That's the case for any sitting office holder, really, when asked about a higher office. That's the way it's always been and the way it will always be. But that doesn't mean it's absolutely true. And in any event, it doesn't stop journalists and pundits from casting the net at this point into the presidential election cycle, even rather widely for potential candidates. So what did the net drag in last week in the Wall Street Journal? A feature story about Ohio's Governor John Kasich, who has insisted that he will seek re-election in 2024 rather than rev up a national campaign for president. Of course, he could do both. Coming up in a few minutes, we're hoping to talk to the author of that article, Neil King Jr., national political reporter for The Wall Street Journal. But joining us now in the studio, Bill Hershey, retired Columbus Bureau correspondent for the Dayton Daily News, former Washington correspondent for the Akron Beacon Journal, which is when I met you many moons ago. Welcome back to the show, Bill.
Oh, it's good to be here. Thank you.
It seems like you were just spending almost a weekly, you know, we're in here almost on a weekly basis last year. Last summer, about this time, we started looking at politics very closely, but here we are anyway.
Well, the 2016 presidential campaign must have started, as you said, and at least there's a lot of stories about it already.
Well, I think I read, and it's somewhere in here, that, well, maybe it has started for someone, people who are thinking about running.
Well, there are candidates out there testing the water, and one of the big tests right this year is in New Jersey, where Chris Christie's seeking re-election. And there was a big story in Sunday's New York Times that this is a launching pad for a 2016 presidential campaign. They compared his re-election campaign to a warm-up for a presidential campaign. So in that instance, he's getting a head start on all these other people who are issuing non-denial denials, as you just said about Governor Kasich.
How do you use a re-election campaign to a governor's office as a launching pad for a national race? How does that work?
I think Governor Christie, for example, is running in a blue state. He's attracting support from the Democratic constituencies, African Americans, some labor people. And that's a state that will get a lot of national publicity because it's on the East Coast. So he's hoping to show himself as a Republican who can win Democrat and independent voters. His problem will be if he gets too cozy with Democrats and moderates that the Republican base will shut him off. And the problem for Republicans is they have to be nominated through primaries and caucuses that are heavily loaded in favor of the Tea Party people and people like that. So it's a tightrope. But this showcases someone's ability to win broad support that you need to be elected president.
And you look at where the money's coming from and that sort of thing.
Yes, the money will show that this is a he right now. I don't know of any she's that are doing this on the Republican side, show that he can raise the kind of money that a presidential candidate has to raise to run a national campaign.
So, you know, like back in the day, when I used to cover these gubernatorial campaigns, you often wondered, why are you raising money from somebody in California? Or why is Tony Celebrezze, for instance, going to Washington, D.C. to raise money? And it's all part of that kind
it's
of a thing.
It's part of that. And any candidate who's running statewide in a big state like Ohio or New Jersey, even little maybe smaller states, they go where the money is. It's like Willie Sutton used to say about the banks. Why do you rob banks? That's where the money is. It's not just cosmetic to show you can raise money there. Uh-huh. It's because there is money there. And there are people who, if you ask them, sometimes want to give to you.
Joining us now is Neil King Jr. He's a national political reporter for The Wall Street Journal. Welcome to the show, Neil.
Hey, Ann, how are you?
Fine, thank you. You wrote about Ohio Governor John Kasich and his possibilities for 2016. We're going to get to that more specifically coming up in a little while. But first of all, at this point in the process, Neil, what sort of weight do we give reports like yours last week about Kasich? You're certainly not alone in the musing department. It's constantly happening now for those of us who pay attention.
It's funny that kind of what tea leaves we look at and what importance we give to them. I mean, at the moment, you know, a mere trip by even, you know, tertiary people. I mean, Scott Brown, you know, the former senator from Massachusetts, goes to Iowa and people start saying that Scott Brown is musing about a 2016 run, which would seem the height of implausibility. With somebody like John Kasich, you know, I think there's a lot of things that you can look at that would say, okay, this person could well be looking beyond his reelection effort next year and towards establishing the sort of bigger themes that a candidacy would be run on. But at the same time, when, you know, he or his people talk about he's intently focused on Ohio right now and his reelection efforts and so on, I think there's real truth in that as well. You know, if you look just sort of across the landscape, there are people. I was up in Boston last week when the Republican National Committee had its big powwow, and Chris Christie, the New Jersey governor, showed up. And that's one of the relatively few, I think I would be confident in saying, he is going to run in 2016. He's making the various moves for that. He's, you know, the speech that he gave to the RNC on Friday was very much sort of like, I've got the winning formula. You look at people like Marco Rubio, I think he's really likely to run. I mean, it's, and but what exactly, you know, what evidence is the distinctive sort of defining evidence? It's not exactly a science, so it's more of just sort of a gut thing. But it's very early, and yet there is so much movement, particularly on the Republican side. On the Democratic side, it's like deafening silence by comparison.
Yeah, exactly. If you have a question or comment, listeners out there, what do you think about John Kasich's chances going forward? 614-292-8513 is the number to call, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Among other things, John Kasich's been mentioned as someone who could rebrand the Republican Party. That's what they've been talking about since last spring. So where is the party in its rebranding process? Has it fallen off the rails, or are they still on some semblance of a track? Neil King?
You know what's fascinating about it? You go back to March when the RNC under Reince Priebus came out with kind of its the chief rebranding document, this big growth and opportunity report, and you know they talked about some policy things, particularly on sort of social issue fronts, and let's be more understanding and less judgmental on issues like gay marriage. And even though they never really talked about abortion, the sort of the view was let's sort of pull back from some of these divisive things. Be out there in the community, more warm and embracing and not pushing people away. And yet, if you fast forward to now, it's just so hard to see where there's evidence that not just that document, but the overall kind of quest along those lines has really gained a foothold in the party. I think the party is so many different brands all at the same time competing against one another, whether it be individual people of some note, you know, Rand Paul's and Chris Christie's of the world, or particular factions within the party itself. And it's interesting because in that RNC document, they talked about there being essentially two main messengers for the Republican Party, what they called the federal sort of national party, which I really took to mean the House of Representatives, considering that's the one thing on the federal level that the Republicans control. And then the Republican governors, and the governors, we were talking about Kasich, are some of them are doing really distinctive, interesting things. And if they were kind of brander-in-chief, one could say, well, they're rebranding the Republican Party. But, you know, the difficulty is not only is there another branding organization underway, which is the House Republicans, and they're, like, you know, very factionalized and riven by various divides. But it's just a matter of fact that when the party has no foothold in the White House or has no president in the White House, they have no brander-in-chief, and they're just going to have to wait until they have a nominee. And meanwhile, there's folks around the margins in various states like Ohio with Kasich, or, you know, Jeb Bush in a quiet way, even though he's not in power now in Florida, and another, Scott Walker, one could talk about any of these individually, are doing their own kind of rebranding efforts. But is it taking hold more widely across the party? I don't think so. Not right now.
Bill Hershey?
I think he's correct. At least looking at the branding efforts here from Columbus, Ohio, there seems to be as many brands as there are Republicans in the House of Representatives, and the Kasich brand or the Christie brand doesn't seem to be taking hold nationally, at least right now.
I mean, eventually you get a national candidate, but unless there's really that push and they've been able to identify with enough different factions, particularly when it comes to the Republicans, although we'll get to the Democrats later, that's one of the problems. You can have the candidate at the front, but if they haven't really made an authentic connection with the foot soldiers, it's hard to get elected.
Well, I think in Neil's story, he raised an issue about establishing the Kasich brand. He talked to the Tea Party leader up in Portage County,
right?
Tom Zouts, Dawestowski.
Dawestowski, yeah.
And I don't think that the challenge they're going to bring to Governor Kasich in the gubernatorial primary is very significant. But he doesn't like Governor Kasich anymore. He campaigned for him, and now he doesn't support him. He doesn't like this brand that Kasich's trying to establish.
Yeah. What did you make of that, Neil?
There were lots of folks like Tom that I talked to around the state. And, you know, I talked a lot to Matt Borges, of course, the head of the Republican Party there and pretty close sort of protege, ally, or whatever, of Kasich. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as he was describing it to me, he's just fairly recently become the head of the Republican Party there. And so he's traveled around to a whole bunch of counties and was down in Hamilton County and counties to the north of Hamilton, north of Cincinnati. And, you know, he had kind of a tough reception in a lot of these places. Not just from Tea Party folks, but also from some more kind of mainline conservatives, particularly on the Medicaid expansion front. And I think there's, you know, there's a lot of sort of seething unrest about that. You two would both know better on this, I think. But if the vote just sort of straightforward were to go either before the House or the Senate there, I think it would pass in this Medicaid expansion thing. But there is a strong cohort of people within the Republican Party who are very uneasy with a number of things that the Kasich's doing, particularly on something that they see as being kind of an enabler for President Obama's biggest domestic policy, you know, achievement or task so far.
Although I don't know if it was your article or someone else who mentioned that John Kasich's referring to it as Hillary care now, and wonder how much that affects Republicans when they're not going to have necessarily Barack Obama to kick around anymore for the next 2 years when it comes
Yeah, that's funny you mentioned that, because I now kind of, when I had lunch with him, he was talking a lot about that, and I wasn't really totally registering what he was, like, yeah, okay, I can see a correlation. And, you know, he brought up Ira Magaziner, which I thought was kind of funny. I hadn't heard that name in quite a long time.
Yeah, well, refresh my memory.
Well, Ira Magaziner was, you know, the person who is now still working for the Clinton Foundation in New York, but was kind of one of the main authors of the healthcare thing that Hillary Clinton put forward, and was sort of a big figure in that early 93-94 period when they were trying to get that stuff through. And that's funny. I mean, it was only when you said that I thought, gosh, I wonder if this really is sort of his trying to position that fight as a him versus Hillary fight. You know, that's interesting. I hadn't really thought about it, because otherwise I wasn't really understanding what the point was.
Yeah.
I thought that was interesting, too. If those of us who followed Kasich for a while remember that when he was in Congress and Bill Clinton was elected and Hillary was getting ready with her health care proposal, that they had this kind of semi-famous dinner at Kasich's house where, to a lot of Washington-type hoopla, Kasich invited Hillary to come over and break bread with him. And I'm not sure if it was about health care or other issues, but he knows who she is, and he knows that she's always a good target and that she'll be there after President Obama leaves office.
He has such an interesting profile. I was talking to somebody after that story ran who called me, who's very close to him, and he was telling me this story. This also goes back to I think this goes back to when he was still in Congress, but it might have been more recently, where this person was bad-mouthing Nancy Pelosi and saying things, derogatory things about her as a politician, and Kasich stopped him and said, "Do you know Nancy Pelosi?" And he said, "Not really. I mean, I haven't met her." And he said, "Well, I think you should withhold judgment on that kind of thing until you do meet her, because she's actually a very decent, very nice woman." And he kind of just, like, cut the person off. And that in itself was, I was just kind of like, wow, that's amazing. You know, you don't find necessarily a lot of Republicans that are going to stand up and say, "Do you know Nancy Pelosi?" She's not at all like that. You know?
That's a good point. John Kasich, I think, is kind of an acquired taste. You don't know what you're going to get. One of the conversations I had with him, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago, he talked about being at a wedding in California and being the only Republican at the table with Democrats, and I think Nancy Pelosi was one of them. And, of course, his friendship with Ron Dellums, the former, I think, mayor of Oakland, and then he was a power in the U.S. House, goes way back when they were fighting the Pentagon together. So I don't know how that helps him with Republicans, but I think it shows that he's a person that can reach beyond his base.
Yeah, there were so many funny things. There's no way you can get into a 2,000-word story, but, you know, there's this legendary thing about how John Kasich is probably the only Republican to ever be thrown off the stage of a Grateful Dead concert.
Yes, another one.
Yeah, and you know, he's like a serious music buff. I'm not sure how much.
Oh, he's always dragging it up at speeches and stuff like that.
Yeah, I don't know if he's really updated his musical taste. I think they're still kind of like stuck in the 70s in some ways. But that side of him is also really fun. He is quite a character.
I'm talking with Bill Hershey, retired Columbus Bureau correspondent for the Dayton Daily News and former Washington correspondent for the Akron Beacon Journal. He's covered Kasich all the way back, and also Neil King Jr., national political reporter for the Wall Street Journal. He wrote about John Kasich next week. We'll continue our conversation about John Kasich, national politics, when we return. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We've been talking about what the Republican Party needs to win in 2016. Now we ask, could that person be Ohio Governor John Kasich? Still with us is Neil King Jr. He's national political reporter for the Wall Street Journal. He wrote about Kasich's record as Ohio governor, his reelection bid next year, and a possible run for the White House in 2016. Also in the studio, Bill Hershey, retired Columbus Bureau correspondent for Dayton Daily News and former Washington correspondent for the Akron Beacon Journal. Joining us now by phone from Washington is Alexander Burns. He's senior political reporter at Politico. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Do we have a sense about what all this early chit-chat, whether or not it tends to be good or bad for candidates in the sense that they get their names out there? But they also tee them up for the inevitable scrutiny as well. Alexander?
I think that we're at a stage in the sort of evolution of modern media and modern presidential politics where if you are a governor or a senator or somebody who wants to be viewed as a potential president, you just need to be prepared for that kind of sustained scrutiny. It tends to be the case these days that when someone becomes a national figure, they then don't stop being a national figure. You don't have some flare-up in Wisconsin where people pay attention to Scott Walker, and then he sort of gets to go back to his life of relative obscurity as a governor. When someone like Rand Paul holds a filibuster in the Senate against drone policy, he's kind of here to stay. So I think for someone like John Kasich, he has not really had the same kind of moment that some of the other potential 2016 Republican candidates have had, where they sort of put themselves on the map in a big way in the national consciousness and then stay there. But the 2014 campaign is a pretty good opportunity to do that.
Yeah. Bill Hershey, I exactly get what Alexander Burns is saying. Even with the flare-up over issue 2 or Senate Bill 5, which would have taken away collective bargaining rights from public unions, caused a huge ruckus here, but it didn't get the same kind of mileage that they did in Wisconsin.
I think it was overshadowed by Wisconsin mm-hmm. because that came first and it was caught the national attention more. But I think 2014, we'll see how much that hurts Governor Kasich. I don't think it's going to hurt him very much at all. I think he's going to have a relatively easy reelection, but he's going to campaign like it's a nail biter. And if he wins big, that's going to project him. He's going to be get some of this national attention that we just talked about.
Yeah, you know, one of the things is his personality. We got into it a little bit earlier, but there is some video footage out there of him lambasting a state highway patrolman for pulling him over and giving him a ticket for speeding. That was very public, and it said a lot about his personality and how out there he can be. Neil King Jr., did you get a sense of that when you were preparing your article for last week?
I did. You know, I spent some time with him when I was out in Columbus, and he's intense. You know, he focuses very much on kind of what's in front of him. We went to a Bob Evans, which I thought was pretty funny, which he goes to a lot when he travels around the state, evidently. And the waitress comes over, and there was a little bit of sort of fussing, like, wow, the governor's at our Bob Evans. And yet, it wasn't, he just, you know, kind of ordered from her. You know, a lot of I've traveled around with Mitch Daniels and a whole bunch of different governors in their states, and usually, you know, you do the whole kind of chit chat, you stand up, you get the photo taken, you know, pat people on the back and stuff. And for Kasich, it was pretty much just a matter of business, and he was there to talk to me, and so he turns to her and orders his chicken noodle soup, and you know, well, on the way out, there was some he had interactions with people and made some jokes and things like that, but it wasn't necessarily the warmest and fuzziest kind of thing. I don't think he does a lot of kind of warm and fuzzy necessarily, and you know, there's others, Rick Perry or other people you go out on the campaign trail with them, and they can be just pretty amazing in that kind of booth-by-booth retail kind of politics. I don't think that's Kasich's strong suit. But then, you know, I went on to him when he gave this big speech in the atrium there at the State House about, for you know, pushing Medicaid expansion, mm-hmm. and he was kind of blowing folks away with, you know, particularly people on the left. At one point, somebody turned to their daughter who was standing next to me and said, God, you think this guy was a Democrat, and he's not. But it was a fulsome, very emotional kind of appeal for why Medicaid expansion should happen and very, you know, emotional defense of the poor and so on. And, you know, that kind of thing resonates with a lot of people.
Alexander Burns, do you think having someone whisper, gosh, you think that guy is a Democrat, is good for John Kasich when it comes to a national primary?
Well, not when you put it like that.
Let's put it a national Republican primary.
you know, I think that it's the luxury that governors have as potential presidential candidates is that they don't have to weigh in on every given federal issue. They don't get so easily pigeonholed ideologically. And so as they prepare to run for president or to explore a presidential campaign, they have in some ways more freedom to kind of put the meat on the bones at a later date. For John Kasich, that means that, you know, if he needs to run for re-election as a more centrist or a compassionate conservative, to coin a phrase, he would then be able to, you know, maybe pivot and talk about other national issues where he's more aligned with the Republican Party. You know, I heard him, I haven't spent time with him as recently as Neil, but, you know, certainly heard from him plenty in the 2012 election, and he, you know, that was not a soft-edged Republican. So where you don't want to end up is in a position where you're viewed as Chris Christie is maybe at risk of being viewed as, you know, a Republican who is just at odds with conservatives, a Republican who likes to stick it to conservatives the way John McCain, for example, used to be. But you do, I think, if you're a Republican, if you look at the state of the National Party, the state of the National Party's brand, and you think about not just a primary but a general election, mm-hmm. you do want to have the luxury that governors do have, the flexibility that they have to say, well, I am a Republican in that I am for small government, but here are the ways A, B, and C that I would be in favor of maybe doing things a little differently than the House of Representatives.
Bill Hershey?
I think Neil made a point earlier that if a Medicaid expansion in Ohio came to a vote in the legislature, just a straight up and down vote, nothing ever seems to happen that way.
Right.
Probably it would pass, but I think it's going to be a big test for Governor Kasich if such a vote ever comes, because some of there's 60, I think, Republicans in the Ohio House, and I don't know, maybe five or six of them want to expand Medicaid, but no more than that. If he can't get this done, I think this is going to be a problem for not just Governor Kasich, but for Ohio and the people who need this help. So I think if he gets that expansion approved, that's going to be a big plus for him.
Well, one thing I would point out, just briefly to go back to what Alex was just talking about on the, you know, reaching out to Democrat side. I mean, it's interesting because if you look at what Chris Christie is up to in New Jersey, I mean, when he came up to Boston and gave his speech last Friday, it was very much this being a closed-door speech that was allegedly just for the, you know, Republican faithful, but all of us, you know, enterprising reporters found our own way to record it. He was very much making the case that he in New Jersey is creating this kind of winning coalition that is the kind of winning coalition that a Republican needs to be able to create to, you know, charge forward and win in 2016 in a national presidential race. And, you know, he was boasting of his own gender gap because he's up by 20 points or something like that among women against his opponent, who also happens to be a woman. And he's been endorsed by some big Latino groups there and by a whole group of black pastors and so on. So he really wants to run out the score among Democrats there and show that that is proof of why he would be good in a national setting. And I don't know for a fact that that's kind of what Kasich's thinking, but that kind of thing is not a bad thing to be able to show folks in a national setting, particularly if you're doing it in a distinctive, you know, purple state or in an outright blue state like New Jersey.
You know, speaking of women, besides Hillary, I feel a real dearth this year, whereas last year by this, or I mean last national election cycle by this time, there were a gazillion of them, it felt like. Nothing out there, women in the Republican Party, is it a moot point at this stage?
You're talking about in like governor's races?
Well, in governor's, someone who's out there that's potential, is any kind of trendy name for 2016.
You know, that's an interesting point because, of course, already on the Democratic side, when you're looking at Senate races, you know, we have women stepping forward in Georgia and Kentucky, trying to think what else. But it is does seem to be a dearth. Maybe Alex has some that come to mind.
Alex,
no, I wouldn't disagree with anything Neil just said. You know, the name that a lot of Republicans are drawn to is Susana Martinez in New Mexico, the governor there. But she has pretty definitively, you know, ruled out running for a national office because of, you know, usually when people rule those things out, you don't take them too seriously. But she's got a couple family members with serious medical issues, and so I think you give her the benefit of the doubt. You know, there were a couple of Republican women who were elected to significant offices back in 2010. You could envision a scenario where if the party chooses a white guy for its nominee, then they really feel like maybe I ought to find someone like Kelly Ayotte, the senator from New Hampshire, for the ticket. But I think you're right that you're not seeing a whole lot of new women pop up in the Republican Party. And for some of the women who were elected back in 2010, the 2014-2016 cycles are going to be a real challenge of whether they can get reelected in a different environment.
Let's take a call now from Ken in Clintonville. Ken, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I was wondering about John Kasich's past. Is it ever going to come back and haunt him that he once sold for Lehman Brothers? I know he tried to cover that over by saying, I was just one of two men in the office in Columbus, Ohio. And I'm thinking, yeah, but if you've been able to sell Opers on Lehman Brothers, I don't know that I would have any retirement today.
Yeah, I mean, it is a... you know, we were just talking a minute ago, Alex, was, I guess, about kind of the examined and unexamined parts of particular possible 2016 candidates' resumes. And, you know, Kasich left Congress at the, 2000. He ran kind of a little bit furtively for a presidential race in that year, but dropped out really super early. And that's when he kind of left the political stage, went off and did a variety of things. But part of what he did was work for Lehman Brothers up through, you know, the crash. And then he ran for governor, and I didn't spend much time looking into exactly what the Lehman Brothers thing was all about. And I think that's the kind of thing, among others, that would be there would be a lot of digging around in that territory should he decide to go out onto the national stage. And I don't know what it would turn up, but I don't dispute that it would be an issue of some kind.
More so on the national stage, Bill Hershey, than you think it was at the state level?
I think these issues were reviewed in the governor's race in 2010. They were overshadowed, though, by the rotten economy.
Mm-hmm.
And Kasich was a Lehman Brothers official. Governor Strickland brought it up repeatedly, and people knew that. Some of the newspapers had quite extensive coverage on what he did. That would all be reexamined in a national campaign as if it had never been talked about in Ohio. That's just the way things work.
And I would add to that, think about what Democrats did to Mitt Romney's record in business working for Bain Capital, which is today a thriving and prosperous and much admired private equity firm. You cannot apply any of those labels to Lehman Brothers. And so I think that when you think about, there are a lot of hurdles that I think someone like John Kasich would have transitioning to the national stage. But the idea that you worked for a bank that was really the poster child of the 2008 meltdown, that's a pretty big problem.
How well do governors transition to the White House typically? Does it take a little bit longer or not? They don't necessarily, John Kasich might be the exception, but they don't necessarily always have those inside the beltway chaps.
Well, I don't know. If you look back across, you know, recent history, there have been vice presidents and there have been governors for the most part who make their way there. It's a much better trajectory, by and large, than coming from Congress, particularly coming from the House. I mean, you know, you're an executive of a big state or whatever size state, and then you come and you're executive of the country. And with somebody like Kasich, and I agree that there would be a lot that he would have to overcome, and I'm not even convinced that he's really thinking about it all that seriously. But, you know, his familiarity with Washington, which is pretty deep, considering he was chairman of the Budget Committee during the 90s in the thick of all the budget, you know, back and forth with Clinton. And he is, if nothing else, you know, he's many things in Ohio, but he is a serious policy wonk, and he has a real ability to grapple with things like that. I think there are a bunch of governors out there now, particularly on the Republican side, who really excel at just digging deep into the, you know, trenches of policy stuff, and would not necessarily have that big a leap to make coming here, assuming that being in D.C. is a matter of knowing policy as opposed to knowing how to work either ends of Pennsylvania Avenue, and that's a different question.
I think that President Obama's inability to get things done in Congress kind of makes the point that you were just making, that coming from Congress isn't always the best qualification to become president. If you think of Bill Clinton and Ronald Reagan, two former governors, one from a big state, one from a small one. Each of them, though, had dealt with legislatures and knew how to get things done. President George W. Bush had a problem because it came after 9/11, so I'm not sure that it's fair to compare him with those two. But competence doesn't help you win elections. Mike Dukakis proved that when he tried to use that as a qualification. But it does help you govern when you get in, and I think that being a governor, particularly in a big state, is a good qualification to help run the country. People come from Congress. They have spokesmen. If they don't want to do anything or make anything happen, they don't have to. Governors have to run the prisons, provide Medicaid, do things. They have to make decisions every day that are important.
We've been talking about Ohio Governor John Kasich as a potential presidential candidate in 2016. At this point, we bid goodbye to Neil King Jr. of the Wall Street Journal. You can check out a link to his article about Kasich on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Thanks so much for joining us today, Neil.
Thank you, Anna. It was a real pleasure.
Coming up, we look beyond the GOP to the Democratic lineup at this stage of the game. Still with us, Alexander Burns. He's senior political reporter at Politico, and also Bill Hershey, retired political reporter for the Dayton Daily News. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Still with us in the studio, Bill Hershey, retired Columbus Bureau correspondent for the Dayton Daily News and former Washington correspondent for the Akron Beacon Journal, and also Alexander Burns. He's senior political reporter at Politico. We've been talking about the Republican Party moving into the 2016 presidential cycle and how it's working to rebrand itself for the future. We've also been bandying about the prospect of Ohio Governor John Kasich as a potential contender. You might think it's too early to be talking about this, but that's only because you aren't planning to run in it. Alexander Burns, we've been focusing on the Republicans a lot here, but it's going to be an open seat, which changes things up a lot for the Democrats. What's your feeling about them in 2013?
Well, right now you really have the Democratic Party frozen in deference to Hillary Clinton and, to a lesser extent, Vice President Biden. You're just starting to see the very, very early signs of a larger field of candidates showing interest. You had Amy Klobuchar, the Minnesota senator in Iowa, over the weekend. You had Martin O'Malley, the governor of Maryland, campaigning out of state for Cory Booker in the New Jersey Senate race. These are names that probably a lot of listeners have not heard before, which is why if you are Amy Klobuchar or Martin O'Malley or one of a number of other Democrats, you do need to start doing some preparation now to get yourself out there. But realistically, the donors in the party, the activists in the party, the operatives in the party are not really going to move in any significant way until Hillary Clinton signals definitively what she's going to do.
So this isn't fundraising time then, right, Bill Hershey?
I think that everything is frozen right now. I think if people were trying to raise money nationally, if their name wasn't Hillary Clinton, I'm not sure how wide open the coffers would be.
She said that she just really isn't into it. She says she has no intention of running. All right. So what is that? What is she really saying, Alex Burns?
Well, I think she's saying that she's not currently a declared candidate for the presidency, right? She has, in a lot of ways, the clearest path to any nomination of anybody since maybe Eisenhower 60 years ago. You know, people say, well, that's what the media said about Hillary Clinton in 2008. But actually, if you look at the sort of metrics of her strength as a candidate, her national poll numbers, particularly her poll numbers within the Democratic Party, they are markedly higher than they were back in 2008. When you do national polling, when you do polling in places like Iowa and New Hampshire and offer people a full list of candidates, she's routinely in the 60, 70, 80% range in terms of preference. So, you know, she has the luxury of taking some time to make up her mind. She will obviously not have difficulty raising money. And really, Anne, the question for Clinton is, how soon, if she doesn't want to run, how soon does she have to say unambiguously, no, I am not doing this, so that she doesn't end up leaving her party twisting in the wind in 2015?
Well, how soon do you think she has to let go?
I think that if she were really intent on not running for president, 2015 is too late. I don't think that she would have to signal this year, but maybe end of next year, middle of next year, because once you look past Hillary Clinton, the rest of the Democratic bench, they have candidates with interesting resumes. They have candidates who meet the traditional qualifications for the presidency. They do not, by and large, have well-known candidates who excite the base or are known to the middle.
Is Vice President Biden's name mentioned just out of politeness because he is the vice president? He's tried to run for president before without much success, and I just wonder if he will really try to do it again.
Well, Neil's colleagues in the Wall Street Journal had an interesting story today saying that Biden's aides have determined that he does have a path to the nomination, even if Clinton does run. But, you know, look, I think that you talk to people. I did a story last week talking to some folks in Iowa about the state of the Democratic field, and they do say it'd be a mistake to underestimate Joe Biden, but he would be the oldest president the country had ever elected by quite a few years. And he doesn't, you know, if you look at his, I think he is a well-liked figure among many folks in the national press because he offers up so much material. But if you look at his poll numbers, even within the Democratic Party, he's not a particularly admired or overwhelming figure as far as his political potency. I don't think that he clears the field the way that Hillary Clinton does.
It's hard to imagine him as being he would be the oldest president. He just doesn't seem that old.
He doesn't. I mean, and this is an argument that his people will make, that, you know, 70 is the new 50. but it is asking, you know, he is not a person who has had a clean bill of health his entire life. He is he does sort of have this sort of goofy grandpa or goofy uncle personality about him. And look, I think a lot of that it has clearly worked for him. He is the vice president of the United States. But when you're talking about, you know, does he have the same kind of overwhelming stature that maybe Al Gore had before the 2000 election? Or, you know, I think you put him maybe in the same category as Bush 41, George Herbert Walker Bush in, you know, the mid-80s, when it was clear that he would run for president. And he ultimately obviously succeeded in winning the presidency. But he had a pretty tough primary on the way.
You know, there's the wisdom that having a tough primary and having a big primary, we have lots of choices at first and it whittles down. That's good for the party because it gets people talking and it lasts a long time. And the person who eventually gets that nomination is, you know, way out there. But I just didn't see that with the Republicans last time. And I'm wondering, are things starting to change? And maybe that wisdom of having a lot of choices at the beginning is not necessarily good for the party?
Well, I think that the wisdom of having a lot of choices as a good thing is good when you have a lot of strong choices, right? So when you're looking at you know, Hillary Clinton versus Barack Obama, the two of them, look, they had some contentious exchanges, but at the end of the day, neither of them truly went nuclear on the other one in that primary, and they probably both became stronger, better known, better respected politicians as a result. The opposite would be the 2012 Republican primaries, where you had a kind of race to the bottom among a bunch of not particularly inspiring, not particularly gifted candidates, and you know, it's advantageous to both parties that it doesn't look like that's where they're going to end up next time.
What do you think, Bill Hershey?
I think that I agree with his analysis of the 2012 Republican field, and I'm wondering what the field will be like in 2016. We seem to have candidates, some candidates, Republican candidates now trying to appeal to a broader constituency, Governor Christie, but those at the national level, Senator Cruz, Senator Paul, seem to be pretty far out there in terms of the kind of Republican candidates Ohio voters like to support. And I expect Ohio will still be a big state in the general election in 2016.
We had a caller earlier. They didn't stay with us, but they did ask a question that, I guess there's a lot of people out there thinking about that aren't, you know, that are frustrated with the process the way it is these days. And that is, when are we going to talk about ideology? When are we going to talk about what the candidates really care about versus the tactical aspects of the campaign? And Alexander Burns, are people going to get enough of that maybe this time? Or is it just going to be the same old thing, how much money they can raise? Just upping the ante again.
Well, I think on the Republican side, you already do have a robust debate about ideology. Bill mentioned a couple of the folks on the national stage. Mm-hmm. As far as federal politics, you know, it's hard to imagine it's hard to recall when we've had a more robust ideological debate than the one that has unfolded in the last few weeks between Chris Christie and Rand Paul over government surveillance and the size and power of the national security state. This is substantive, meaty stuff. You haven't heard as much of it on the Democratic side, and in a lot of ways, that's just sort of the nature of things when you have an incumbent president that, you know, well, what do Democrats believe on issue X? By and large, they believe whatever Barack Obama says they believe. He's the president. He's the leader of the country, and even more emphatically, the leader of the party. But in a world where Hillary Clinton does run for president, or especially a world where she doesn't, there are a whole bunch of issues that Democrats have not had to have an internal debate on, related especially to foreign policy, military policy, national security. Largely the party that controls the White House doesn't have to have internal debates about those things because, you know, you believe whatever the president wants you to believe. A world where Hillary Clinton is suddenly scrutinized again as far as, well, when do you think American military force should be used overseas? What kind of surveillance do you think is appropriate? I think we would get pretty substantive pretty fast, but maybe that's just optimistic of me.
A story, in the Washington Post today queried Chris Christie and Rand Paul, is a GOP big enough for both of them? The final analysis, as I whizzed down through the articles, no, it's not. It's not big enough. Not when it comes to getting elected in 2016, it is.
Well, you certainly can't have the Republican Party bet on both of these guys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Chris Christie emphatically represents a version of Republicanism that says we need to affirmatively reach out to diverse constituencies. We need to do things like immigration reform. We need to accept in some ways the power of the state as far as national security is concerned. And by the way, we also need to try to limit the size of government and limit the power of organized labor and be friendly to business, these things that most Republicans believe. You know, the Rand Paul view of things is much, much more uncompromising and much more plainly ideological. And you certainly couldn't have a ticket, I think, with two guys on it who just approach politics from two completely different directions.
I think there's a human dimension to this, too. What really seems to irk some of the true believers, the Tea Party and conservative elements in Ohio, is that Governor Christie put his arm around President Obama when the president came to New Jersey for aid during Hurricane Sandy. And that just seems to be like chalk on the blackboard to people. But that's the kind of thing that has helped Republicans in the past in Ohio, which is, again, is supposed to be a key state. And I don't know if a candidate who doesn't reach out like that, and President Reagan did, even as conservative as he was, he cooperated with Democrats.
Well, and we talked about John Kasich being friendly with Democrats and wanting to work with them.
Yeah, he has a track record in Congress. In Columbus, he doesn't have to work with Democrats.
Nope.
He has worked with the Democratic mayor in Cleveland. He's worked with Mayor Coleman in Columbus.
Democrat in Coleman.
And he's really kind of co-opted things that way.
Paul and Bexley, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Paul.
Oh, good morning. I had a question about Chris Christie. He comes across that somebody willing to work across the aisle to some extent, but he is extremely conservative compared to most Democrats. But I wonder how his New Jersey-isms will survive nationally. It flies okay on the East Coast and in New Jersey, but he can be pretty gruff and rough and pretty obnoxious to people when they ask questions that he doesn't like to the press as well as to his constituents. And like I said, I can see that maybe working in New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, in that area. But you get to the Midwest and West Coast, you think he's going to be able to control that or modify that to the point where he's going to be able to survive?
Alex Burns?
Well, in some ways, it's a question that recalls Rudy Giuliani's 2008 campaign and from a different direction, Rick Perry's 2012 campaign. These people who... Chris Christie is, part of the reason why I think he's so popular nationally is that he is what people around the country think the governor of New Jersey ought to be. This sort of big, larger-than-life, rambunctious, combative, kind of lovable, angry teddy bear kind of character, right? That's how people imagine the governor of New Jersey. I don't know if it's how people envision the president of the United States. We saw Rudy Giuliani, who was just sort of, they called him America's mayor for a reason. He is what people thought the mayor of New York should be like. With Rick Perry, this is a person who, if, the New Hampshire Republican Party called Central Casting and said, send me a governor of Texas, they would send you Rick Perry, right? But once you get out there, no, it didn't. And, part of running for president is showing that you're not just a regional candidate, and part of running for president is showing that you're not just a sort of media slash show business caricature, that you're actually a real person with empathy and ability to understand people from different regions. And I would say this about Chris Christie. He's obviously an incredibly ambitious man and a very, very shrewd politician. So I would be surprised if he were not aware of the issue you raise as far as, whether his shtick that works in Bergen County can work in, Franklin County.
The first presidential campaign I hadn't covered in a long time as a reporter was 2012, but I had one of the anecdotal experiences about Chris Christie. I was taking a bunch of foreign tourists around Ohio because it was like visiting this
Disneyland of politics.
Politics, and we ran into a union leader in Cleveland who was giving thanks that Chris Christie was not the Republican candidate in 2012 because he said that had he been, he thought Christie would have had the support of his members and probably could have carried Ohio. And that was partly a function of the bad economy, but I think it also shows his ability to maybe to appeal to people beyond New Jersey. But he hadn't been screened by reporters and everybody else by then, so it might be different if he actually mounted a national campaign.
Thank you, Paul. How much does the historic nature of Obama's presidency matter going forward, the first black president of the United States? Alex Burns?
I think it matters a great deal as far as how the lens through which both parties view their choices in 2016. It is very hard to imagine a scenario where either party, or certainly a scenario where both parties choose two white men for the ticket again. I think it's a pretty decent bet that Romney Ryan will be the last two white guys ticket that we see for a little while. Just for the Republican Party, there is too much of a sense that, my goodness, we've got to broaden our appeal. And for the Democrats, after Barack Obama, it would really be, in a lot of ways, a letdown for the party base and just for the sort of broader community of people who watch politics in general if you saw them go from an Obama versus Clinton 2008 primary to, a Martin O'Malley, Andrew Cuomo ticket in 2016.
Mm-hmm. Bill Hershey?
Oh, I think he's right. I think that obviously it changed history. That's a cliche, and things are not going to be the same going forward. And I think African-American voters in particular are going to want more. They're the most dependable part of the Democratic coalition right now. And I don't think they're going to be shut out. They haven't had much success in Ohio at the statewide level. But they've had this success nationally, and I don't think they're going to want to go back.
Do you see any African-American possibilities out there at this point, Alex?
You know, the person who folks in the Democratic Party mention most frequently is Deval Patrick, who in 2016 will be the former governor of Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. He has made it pretty clear that he wants to get out of government for a little while, make some money, tend to his family. But he's, I think anyone who saw him at the convention last summer came away with the sense that this is a guy with some real political juice to him. So maybe not 2016, maybe a little bit later down the line, the guy is, you know, young enough that he can wait a little while. But Democrats do not have a deeper, particularly diverse bench of politicians out there, which is why the elections that are happening in 2014 are going to be so important as far as, you know, determining whether Democrats will end up having a body of candidates who do look like their larger coalition.
Well, Alex Burns, I want to thank you for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
That's Alex Burns. He's senior political reporter at Politico. And Bill Hershey, as always, like we said, here we are again. 3 years to go this time, though, right?
Okay, well, here we're back on the merry-go-round, I guess.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Bill Hershey, retired Columbus Bureau correspondent for the Dayton Daily News and former Washington correspondent for the Akron Beacon Journal. Thanks to everybody for listening today. We appreciate it. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is listener-supported WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus and streaming on the web at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station, a service of WOSU Public Media.